Hi everyone, this is Joker from Contact Lost. Welcome to another episode in which we will be covering the up-and-coming Chaos Knights. So with me today are two guests who provide the expertise insight, starting with Duda.
Hi.
And Vladdy.
Hi. Hi guys.
Hey guys, thanks for joining. Right, so let's jump straight to it. So what are your first impressions of the codex? I mean, do they've had some success playing the Chaos Knights for a bit when they first got OPSEC in the first data slate out of nowhere? And Vladdy, you've also played this faction somewhere about a year ago with quite an interesting off-meta, shall I say, list. So Vladdy, let's start with you. Your first impressions of the codex.
Well, there's a lot of good, nice things and shiny things in the codex. Basically, everything got a bit better. Though, if you're looking for improvements on the scale of Tyranid codex, you'll be sorely disappointed. Basically, not many things in the terms of data sheets changed that much. Some weapons got improved, but not really in any shocking way. But from my point of view, those improvements are enough to look at the knights kindly for the months to come. I think general there were some things, small things that were changed that actually are big improvements to the army, like the fact that you can mix detachments, knights detachments, with any other Chaos army now without losing OPSEC and without losing five men, counting for five men on the objective role in the Chaos Knights detachment. And that's huge, especially for, as you said, my list that I tried like a year ago, and that list is now far better than it used to be. Maybe we'll get back to that later. And so basically there are a lot of improvements here now, and there are some things that stand out obviously as huge buffs, like those favored abilities. Some of them are really powerful on their own, and some if you mix them together, then you can get some interesting combinations. So basically there's a lot of to uncover in the codex. But at the same time, except for some overlapping buffs that you can get on big knights or a single big knight, nothing really stands out as too overpowered at the first look. What is clear in the codex is that knights lost a bit of mobility. The straightforward nerf is -2 to move for every single knight. That actually is a lot. We'll probably get back to that later too. And I think there's no stratagem for advancing and charging no more. So that also a bit makes it more difficult for knights to cover the ground. So basically, there are some major things, some minor buffs. The army is better in general, but I don't think it's straightforward top Tau or Tyranid level, or maybe Kratos Eldar level.
Oh, well, that may be good. Yeah, I've also noticed those things regarding the movement that you've mentioned here at the very end. And those are a little bit of a disappointment, but generally good to hear some optimism. Duda, what about you? Do you agree, or have you got a different take?
Yeah, I think I agree. Basically, I read the codex and I was like, that's the good codex. That's how all codices should just look like. It's not too strong, not too weak. It's just fine. And if all the codexes would be at the same level, I think the game would be much, much better.
Well, that's great. I think that says quite a lot. All right. Well, in that case, let's get into the book itself. So first up, we've got detachment abilities. Let's not go through traitorous lances or dreadlord blades or anything else. You've already mentioned, Vladdy's already mentioned that the towering foe is still here, and now you can even soup with it. So that's counting as 5 models on an objective marker, or 10 if you're Titanic.
Yeah, I think we should take a look at the Dreadblades.
Okay.
I think that we generally should talk about a little about this first page, about Inferno Iconoclast changes, about this.
I was going to get to Inferno and Iconoclast, but yeah, well, the Dreadblades are before that, so yeah. Do that as you've called it out.
Yeah, because the Dreadblades are only option to get the Agents of Chaos keyword, which allows you to mix the knights to other chaos army and not lose the entire army rule, like Cabals or Contingents of Nargul. So I think that's very important to mention. If you want to mix, for example, Thousand Suns with knights and do not lose the Cabalistic rituals, then you have to use Dreadblades. Otherwise, you get the better households on knights, but you lose the Cabalistic rituals. So that's the trade-off.
Yeah, but it's also worth mentioning that the only way to include the knights as agent of Chaos, you need to have a super heavy axillary detachment, which basically in every situation costs -3 CPs. And with incoming nerfs to starting a number of CPs, I'm not sure that looks like a good idea, basically. Especially that you can include from more than seeing only one unit of red blades, because it's super heavy auxiliary detachment. So it sounds like an interesting option, though I do think that we will not see much of it actually being played. That's what I think.
Isn't super heavy auxiliary detachment -1 CP only right now?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I think it's only if your warlord is the same faction.
Ah, okay,
so
okay.
In this case, I think it would be still -3.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that hurts. That hurts a lot. But
yeah.
This is the way you can, you know, do not lose the entire army rule, like Cabals or Contingent of Nargul.
Yeah, which are good rules that you probably want to keep.
Yeah, if you want to mix.
Yeah, definitely worth mentioning. All right, so yeah, the traitorous ambition. So I think Iconoclast hasn't changed.
It's changed. It basically lost the rule that within 12 inches of your models, if someone fails the morale, one more model escapes. So it's no more here. But +1 attack and +1 AP. Yeah. But +1 at attack and +1 AP. On the first turn of combat, so after charge, after being charged, after heroic intervention is the same.
Okay, yeah, that's good stuff. And the Inferno, the table has changed completely, almost. Yeah.
So the way you get the buffs is the same, but the table changed. Maybe Vladdy can explain.
Yeah, basically, honestly, we're more interested in the Infernal part of the codex, because the army that I used to play was concentrated about the part of Renegade Knights that I played, that I included in your list, was the Infernal ones, and it basically was centered around abusing the one of these abilities from Demonic Surge. I was overcharging one weapon to give it +1 damage, +1 strength, with especially with Moriax lightning locks. It worked very well against some lighter vehicles like Dark Elder ones. And the other weapon was damage two weapon with the Volka something something, and so I could have upgraded it to damage three, and still work the weapon then worked quite well against things that had reduction of damage. So basically that what was the army was based around previously, and now this abuse was nerfed a bit because that part of the Morning Surge ability was changed, and it now gives plus one wound on one weapon. That's a bit better in some situations because plus one two wound is better than plus one strength. And obviously the fact that it no longer gives plus one damage is a huge, huge nerf. On the other side, though, on the other hand, now you can upgrade both shooting weapons and close combat weapons, which actually Duda did once on the tournament anyway. Yeah. But you can do that.
I predicted
now.
It.
Yeah, you can do that legally now. So basically, it's hard to call that a nerf. It's actually a change. It's a change because it's better in some situations and worse in some. I basically will be running through the households and talking about Vextrix, then I'll share what I want to do with knights in my list. So basically, I'll be using it. I'll be using it from the household, and I will be using the Winged Surge all around. I'll still be using this ability. And those two that were changed are good as well. One gives you plus three to movement. It was changed previously. It gave, I think, plus two to movement, plus one to charge, plus one to advance. Mm-hmm. Now it just gives plus three to movement. So it's a bit better if you still want to move. You don't want to advance to lose the ability to shoot with heavy weapons, for example. That plus three to move can be useful in some situations. And the other one is transhuman, basically. You can give a transhuman to a knight. And that's it. So that's the change. I do think those abilities in general, these new ones, are a bit worse than what they used to be, but they're still quite useful. So, so like that.
All right. Moving on, what we got, the dreaded abilities. So that's a new mechanic. And
I think one more thing about traitorous ambitions, that dreadblades do not get them. It's also important.
Yeah.
So that's another trade-off with dreadblades, that if you want to use them, they don't get the iconoclast either infernal. They get only the household.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks for that. And then up next we've got household bonds. So that's obviously your chapter tactic and so on and so forth. And then a new mechanic is mentioned, the dreaded abilities. So basically all your knights have a dread range, which starts at 12 inches. And there are a number of abilities that take effect if a dread test is failed. And the dread test is a roll of 2d6 compared, which when exceeds the leadership of the unit that has to take that test is then failed. But I think that's either my source of information is not in the right order or that comes later. So we'll be getting back to that. And I've got the Dread Households up next. So Duda, any favorites from the six presented in the book?
Yeah, for me, as I think that iconoclast is better. And the first one, Herpetrax, is, I think, the best one. It grants you the best combination of passive ability, warlord trait, and relic. Mm-hmm. It gives +2 to wounds on your war dogs and +4 to wound on your Titanic models. So on average list, you get like two Armiger class models in wounds, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good passive, especially that it doesn't change the crippling tables. So you have to lose 8 wounds on the small one to get on the middle row of mm-hmm. statistics. That's cool. I would just pass the stratagem. It sucks, but the warlord trait bow to none allows you to ignore all the modifiers to your characteristic profiles, except those that come from changing the table row. Mm-hmm. But you just ignore all the others, so you cannot be slowed by any psychic power. You cannot get any minuses to hits, to wound, and like this. You ignore all the modifiers to hit rolls, wound rolls, and damage rolls. So, to which now the game is a lot of such abilities are in the game. So that's cool that you can ignore it, and you can ignore all the modifiers to advance rolls. That's not really important, but to the charge rolls. So there is no such thing that you charge through the forest and get -2. So now you can ignore it. That's very cool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To just ramp up the offensive ability of one of your guys, especially a big one if you use it. And the relic is cool. It just allows you to get -1 to hit on every attack made against the model. This is, I think, one of the not many possibilities to get -1 to hit on the Imperial Knight, especially when dense cover doesn't work for you. And that combines with denying the rerolls very well. So that's the kind of combo I think is very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm liking the Herpetrax as well, because it feels like those additional wounds give you just a bit of an edge over things that could usually kill an Armiger Knight or even one of the big ones.
Yeah, so it's like it makes your critical mass a bit higher.
More critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that Warlord trait, though, I'm just wondering, because it says ignore modifiers to damage rolls. So when you're fighting in combat, there's obviously no damage roll with the weapons that are available tonight. Oh, except for the new combat small guy. But would that roll then ignore a damage reduction? Or given there's no roll, it wouldn't come into effect? Because I think we've had a similar thing with the Stampede some time ago and some stratagem.
Yep.
Yeah, but Stampede was only FAQ'd by WTC, I guess, and there is no answer from Games Workshop. So I really hope they would address it, because I think in core rules there is no such thing mentioned like a damage roll. And if the flat damage is a roll that on a certain amount, or it's something mm-hmm. else than damage roll, this is not explained.
Yeah, so definitely something for an FAQ. Well,
I do think that I'm feeling for the night, so I hope it's gonna be fact. But I think that at least till the WTC will be playing with WTC rules, and if the fact makers for WTC are gonna be in any way consequential, they will just fuck it the same way. So if we are to expect anything, I think we should expect that the weapons that have no damage roll will be not affected by that, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. At least for now.
Yep.
Maybe we should send a question to FAQ team of Games Workshop before the premiere of the Codex.
yeah, maybe we should. Vladi, do you have any favorites from the household?
I'm actually sticking to my favorite, the one that I use in my list, the Vextris one. I do agree that if you lean heavily on the knight models in your list, so basically you're either playing almost all knights list or all knights list, then the iconoclast and Hesperax House is definitely probably the best. That plus two wins to Wardog. The Wardogs are a huge buff. But in my list, I use knights for a bit different purpose. And I do think, in general, the pure knights list are subpar now to those lists, the soups, because of the decline of mobility of knights. That decline have to be recompensated with something else. And since OPSEC and five men on the objective for knights are not exclusive, if you take a soup list, then I do think that leaning heavily on knights, I don't think that's the best way forward, competitively speaking. That's what the lack of mobility is one thing. The second thing is bring it down, which you just, you know, give away in plenty when you lean heavily in your list on knights. So basically, I'm more inclined to use knights as support units with spending a lot, around the half of the 2,000 point army on them. Taking my favorite now unit in the codex, which are halberdiers, all halberdiers. Now there are Wardog executioners. They were given a huge, in my opinion, a huge buff, small but huge, in terms of minus two on their auto counts. They have flat three damage, so they deal with, they have eight shots, else that is in average per model. So they deal in numbers and units that have big numbers quite well, and with tough units as well because of free damage. And minus two gives them ability to actually inflict damage on things that are in cover or have nice armor save. That was what that unit was actually lacking. So because of the fact that I want to base my army on the support role, fire support role, I'll be, for example, taking four halberdiers and two huntsman units with the goal to dominate the middle of the table with them, and my deployment zone and the middle of the table, then the no man's my part of the table. I want to make sure that I have a lot of obstacles there, and I'm going to deal with the opponent in his deployment zone and farther from my deployment zone with Chaos Space Marines. So basically, because of that, I'll be taking Vextrix, which gives my knights one reroll to hit and not or. And one real wound, so it's a nerf, because Vextrix was able to use those rerolls both in close combat and in shooting. Now it's just shooting, but I can also, Vextrix is also very nice stratagem for 1CP to ignore all minuses to hit rolls, modifiers to hit rolls, and ballistic skill modifiers. So if I want something dead, I can overcharge one weapon to give it plus one to wound, and use that CP to make sure that I will actually hit enough things with that. Moreover, the stratagems that we'll get back later to also kind of they give you options to concentrate the Wardog firepower on a single unit, which also kind of invites you to use those knights, those Wardog knights, as fire support. So basically, and if I will be probably testing those six knights, plus maybe one big one, Abominant class? I mean, since Abominant. The one with psychic powers.
The new guy.
Yeah, the new guy, because he will work well with
the relic,
with both relic and world trade. World trade gives you +2/+2 to wound characteristic, and you regain d3 lost wounds every command phase. Moreover, the model will have 5+ field opening from the power, and he will have +1 damage on his attacks, because the relic gives you +1 attack as long as you don't use sweep profile, and his weapon doesn't have a sweep profile, and at the same time giving you 3 hits per attack, but it's not a sweep profile, so it works with that weapon. It also gives you +2 to movement, so it kind of covers for the lost movement in the book. So and that I will be supplementing with some fast moving Chaos Space Marines models to be able to take away those infantry hiding behind breachable terrain that those knights cannot cover, cannot get through. So that's my first pick, but let's be honest, it's a pick that suits my style and the list that I like to play with knights, combining it with Chaos Space Marines.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's good to hear, because we have two different takes, pure knights and to use that souping ability that is now here in different ways, either so via those dread plates.
I think we should just mention, because I think we didn't. I think the only thing knights lose when they soup is those dread abilities, if I'm correct. So basically, we will get to them, I think, in a second. They are quite nice, some of them. But
it's
not
dread abilities, it's some Harbinger run.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But this is what knights lose, so we'll get back to them in a second. And then we'll maybe we'll talk again if that's a huge thing to lose if you soup knights.
I think I know your opinion on that, given what you've just said. But yeah, we'll get to that. I think, maybe not, but yeah, in my opinion, those two are also the standouts, if any. But there's also one new household, House Korvax. It's an infernal household, so we have 3 of each now, whereas before it was 3 iconoclasts and 2 infernals. And I think it's an interesting one. What do you guys think? It doesn't have the worst combination of bond, stratagem, trait, and relic. But do that, your take?
Well, yeah.
I need to...
Okay, I can get through one important fact about... two important fact about that house. The first thing... isn't that the house that can be combined with Belakor?
Yep, that is the one.
So basically, that's one thing that stands out as interesting, because this is the one that you can actually use with Belakor for some support, and it has actually an extremely nice stratagem that allows a knight both War Dogs and Titanic. In fact, if you use that on War Dog, you can use that on 2 War Dogs per turn. And if you do, you can move through terrain like it's not there. So basically, if you want to get through the ruin wall, no problem. Actually, you can move through any obstacles on the way like it's not there. So it's a extremely nice stratagem for knights.
Yeah, and if you play on WTC tables, it is an issue sometimes with all that terrain moving around. So yeah, that's definitely a good thing. What about the trait and the relic?
Yeah, the bond, first of all. Yeah. That's the problem of this household, I think, as you basically lose any other passive ability, even stupid reroll 1 to hit or whatever, just to get one one additional Harbinger ability, but only from the third battle round. So
no, that's sorry. The yeah, third battle round. Yeah, there's a stratagem for what you're saying.
Basically, okay, at the end, at the start of any, but those Harbinger abilities, I don't think that choosing one additional, it's enough to compensate the loss of the ability, of the passive ability of any kind.
And unless you could choose any ability, because if you could pick no obsec for you at start of battle round one, that might be good.
Yeah, that might be, but it says that you can choose from the current battle round or any previous.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I know you can't do that. But if you could, then maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, then maybe yes.
Yeah, I don't. It's basically a very nice stratagem, and the rest, and the bow trade and the relic are. They do not stand out, and the household bond. I agree. It seems a bit subpar to the rest of the codex, to the rest of households.
Yep. All right. So we've got those households covered. So now the next thing is we've got dread households. So these are either for your custom night house that you might want to have, or for your dread blades. So any dread blade has to choose one of these, and if you've got more than one dread blade, they must all be unique. To be honest, I haven't found anything interesting.
The only one that we can mention is -1 to damage when you're attacked by strength 7 or less.
Yep.
That's the only one that sometimes maybe can be useful, but it is really depending on your opponent, because
the problem is those.
Let's agree. Most of the shooting, most of the attacks that are aimed against your knights gonna be 8 or more strength.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The problem with those bonds is that you can choose only one. And similar rules in other codexes give you at least two choices.
Yeah. And you lose, of course, the. So basically, trade relics and such things.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, the trade-off, you will lose access to specific household relic stratagem and trade, and you are given one fell bond that is similar, let's say, to the household ones, but you lose everything else and gain nothing in return. So basically, it doesn't sound like a fair deal. I think they kind of fell here. They failed here. If you could change, you could take two of those and lose all the household specific relic traits and so on, then some of them might be considered. But if you can choose only one, I think it's a waste of paper.
Yep, nicely said. Right, so let's not waste any more breath on that. And onto the stratagems, of which we have 4 pages. So anything interesting here? And like Vladi said before, we've lost charging after advancing, which I think was a quite common one and will be missed. Right, Vladi, you got anything interesting in here?
Well, a lot. it's a roller coaster with those stratagems. There are some that are so ridiculously stupid and it's useless. It's so ridiculously useless. Like, I don't know. There are some that gives you something but takes away. There was one that to ignore invulnerable saves, but you can only make one attack. And something more, you have to do, you have to do that. And you can make only one attack. And if you win a roll off, then not only then this attack takes away invulnerable saves, but if you fail the roll off, the damage of the attack is 0. So basically,
But it's not because you don't lose all the attacks. You can just use it on one certain attacks you hit. So that's
okay.
Not that
so
bad.
You don't lose, but I meant you can only use that stratagem on one attack, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It is the same as it was because it's a dev grip. Basically, now it do not make you to put some
so
more.
So basically,
thoughts.
It's
now you can just ignore the invul on one
there's
attack.
There's a strong possibility of just losing one CP with that. And not only losing the one CP, but also losing one attack. So it seems like
on the other hand, there is a big possibility that you strike someone with -5, 8 damage, 8 without inf, right?
If we're talking about big knights, then yeah. But if you're talking about small ones, that sounds a bit useless.
But it works only for the gauntlet, so only the big knights.
So basically,
actually,
there are
it
some,
does work
some...
for the new small combat guys.
So basically, there are some controversial ones, but there are some extremely nice that actually cover some of the disadvantages of knights that they had previously. Now you can put the CPs fall back and shoot and charge with, I think, war dogs. War dogs. So basically, that's what war dogs kind of lack. It still costs a lot because it costs 2 CPs, and you can use that on the one model. But in some cases, it's a situation when that will win games. I previously playing war dogs had this. It was very problematic when the war dogs were tied in combat, especially those shooting ones. And now you can just, you know, put 2 CPs, fall back and shoot. It's a very nice thing. You can also, for 2 CPs, give you additional hits on sixes on all the war dogs as long as they attack one unit. It's also a very useful stratagem, unfortunately, also for 2 CPs. But it's very nice. I don't think there's rotary shields anymore. It's called Diabolic.
The name's changed. Yeah.
And the way it works, I think it changes as well, I'm sure. Anyway, it just gives you flat out 4+ win wound by save now in shooting phase. So even if Magera will get those keywords that it needs, it still will not be able to improve its invulnerability up to 4+. I think it will just stick to with 5+. So basically, there are some interesting ones. Some are works only with the upgraded knights. So basically, the knight have to have a specific keyword from the specific guard to be able to use it. But as I said, it's 4 pages. I'm not sure if we want to get through most of them, but there are some very nice that can improve your cover some disadvantages of the knights that they previously had, and which is also important. A lot of them works specifically with war dogs. That is a huge change, because if you were to go through the stratagems in the previous codex, it kind of looked like those war dogs were a bit overlooked. There were some stratagems specific to war dogs, but they were rare. Now almost every stratagem has at least mention of a war dog class. In most cases, it just gives you the lesser number of CPs you have to spend to use it if you will use it on war dog. There are some stratagems that works only with specifically with war dogs. So it's nice that the Games Workshop actually mentioned that the people are playing those small knights a lot. Maybe Duda can add something else while I'm reading through those stratagems to find something interesting.
Yeah, the biggest I think every army of knights would use is -1 to damage in combat.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the huge stratagem that allows you to, you know, for damage to armies, it's like doubling the durability of your knights. And there is Resurrection on 4+. now it works on for Iconoclast and Infernal also. So it's not the Infernal only, but you it requires to have the Chaos Undivided keyword, which you get on one of the three blessings. But that's a huge change. If you want to have this opportunity, you just buy this upgrade, buy this keyword. And it comes also with some nice buffs, so that's cool. I think the very big improvement is that you can give the Warlord two traits. Because now you can have, for example, OPSEC on the Big Knight and something else. That's really good. And there is a lot of, you know, situational things like, I don't know, additional attack on your sweep profile. Let's say this ignoring an invul and, I don't know, plus one to hit and such things. So let's do not cover it all because I think...
Yeah, no, totally.
These are not so universal.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. As you said, like four pages of those strategies. So there is a lot of options. Some of them sounds terribly situational, but to be able to use the arm in general properly, you actually have to fluent in this language of stratagems in this new book. It's a lot to cover, a lot of options, a lot of things you can use during the game.
Yeah, true. I'd just like to mention too, because there is now a stratagem which I think Chaos Knights really lacked before, and that is to operate on your full wounds characteristic, although it does come with a caveat.
But only for the Nurgle. Only for the Nurgle.
Yep, exactly. And also, well, we will be getting to those favors of the Dark Gods next, I think. But you can also give a keyword via a stratagem for a CP, which you can use twice playing 2,000 points. So it's a way. I don't think anyone
would use it. So
yeah.
It's trading CP for only a keyword. It doesn't grant you anything else than ability to use the other stratagem.
So basically you can use
one of those, let's say, less useful ones in the card. Mm-hmm.
Yep, but it's there. All right, favor of the Dark Gods. Duda, do you want to talk us through quickly what mechanic this is?
Yeah, so it's the standard upgrade mechanic that you can put to any knight. You just pay the points. So that's cool. And that's not the CP. You can just pay the roster points. So let's say in the knights, it is hard to get something for 30 points, right? if your roster sets up like you are 1,950 points, you cannot fit anything into this 50 points. And now you can just buy some upgrades. That's cool. Mm-hmm. The cost of the upgrades depends on what model do you put them on. So for the Wardog, most of them are the cheapest, but not always. For the Abhorrent class, it's the middle cost. And for the Tyrant class, it's mostly the most expensive, but that's not the thing. They depends, and that's cool. Because, for example, the combat ones are cheaper for the Tyrant class because it fights worse. So mm-hmm. they thought about it. That's cool. And they give you the passive buff for the entire game. And if you do the worthy offering for the god, that's cool, fluffy thing. So if you kill enough models, enough wounds, you calculate the wounds of killed models. So if you make some wounds but do not kill the models, it doesn't count. But if you kill, for example, put the last wound on the Rhino, it gives you 10 points. Mm-hmm. And depending on what class of the Imperial Knight you have, so Wardog, you need to take 5 wounds. On the middle class, you need to take 10 wounds. And on the Tyrant class, you need to take 15 wounds. And then if you make it at the end of the phase, the buff upgrades, so you keep the basic buff and you get the additional one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So, Vladi, any interesting ones? I mean, there are a couple, but
Come on.
your favorites other than the
Most of
blessing
them
of the Dark
are.
Master?
Yeah, well, the obvious one that was talked a lot already in Tianchen is the blessing of the Dark Master that disallows any rerolls against the knight, and obviously that is going to be taken. Actually, it's going to be taken in every list. I actually put that even a six warlock list to give to the huntsman, the forward one, to keep it alive for a bit longer. It's only cost plus 20 points, so it jumps from 150 to 170 points, so it's not that much of an investment. But obviously, if you want to invest in bigger knights, then it works even better for them. So I do think that it's a first pick for any big knight. If you're running a big knight, pick that. Easy. You just, saved a lot of time thinking about anything else. Just pick that one. You'll be safe with that. There's also one that's going to be obviously in any single list, I think. It's Mirror of Fates. It's for 15 points on small one, and it's going to be taken on small ones. It gives you it saves you one command point on 5+ every time you use a stratagem. So basically, the way to regenerate those command points, especially with the new command points rule, I think that's going to be in every single list on some war dog that's going to be kept behind your lines, some shooting one probably. Especially that if you, for example, consider those Helverines, actually getting a favorite ability on Helverine is quite easy. You only have to take 5 wounds on models that you kill, and you have a huge chance of getting that in a single turn. And after that, you can once per battle round. You roll actually no, after making a hit roll, wound roll, or saving roll for the model, you can change that result to 6. So you wanna take on some huge damage dealing hit that you took on the knight. You can switch that to 6, and you should be able to activate that favorite ability quite quickly on the shooting knight. So that's gonna be taken, I think, straight away. Most lists. Okay, I don't want to, just talk about three of them. Maybe do that have some favorites.
Maybe not the favorites, but there are some of them are worth mentioning, I think. Slaanesh especially. One of them gives you the heroic intervention, so that's cool. That is a thing that you lack on the knights, that you stay on the objective and some five guys just come and take it from you. So with one knight you can just heroically intervene. The other one is minus one to hit and two wound from close combat attacks. That also improves your durability. And if you somehow, which Vladi said, it's not so hard on the war dog to kill five wounds, get the favorite ability, you get the aura of minus one to attack, which also is very good. One of them allows you to advance or fall back and shoot. So that's also the cool one. And if you make that favorite, you can charge after advance or fall back. And one worth mentioning, but it's hard to tell because it's very expensive. It's the Nurgle one that gives you an aura of minus one to strength to your opponents. So if someone come close or try to hit it in close combat, it might make the difference that you give the minus one to strength, but that's not so obvious. And as I said, it's a 30 points, I think, for the small one. So
That's actually, yes, it's a bit expensive, and you have to remember that you have to pick one for the night. You can't take two on one.
yeah.
Duda was right that I think those Slaanesh ones are interesting. I, for example, will be definitely testing both those two forward knights, the light and the small huntsman knights that I'll be taking in the list. One will be running with the Dark Master's Blessing, and the other will be running with Beguiling Majesty, because this, as Duda said, activating the favorite ability on the knight is not that difficult, and having a model that subtracts one attack from hit roll and from wound roll in close combat, and both take away one attack of the attacking model, sounds quite good, and it's not that much of an investment. The Beguiling Majesty costs also 20 points for a model, so it jumps from 150 with Malta to 170, and it in the survivability of such a war dog is I think improves a lot with those abilities, so I think it's worth taking.
Yeah, and the big case of those, all of those blessing, is that you get this certain keyword, so you get the access to the stratagems we set earlier. And the best one is for the Chaos Undivided, which is no rerolls. So you have knight with no rerolls against it. You cannot reroll hit rolls, wound rolls, and if it dies, you can try to resurrect it, because that's the same.
So yeah, basically, that means you have to, if you don't have in your knight army knight with those undivided blessing, especially blessing of the Dark Master, that you did, then you did something wrong with your list. You have to rethink it, because you need to have at least one. Not only because it's good, but also because it allows you to, you know, turn the tables on your opponent by getting back with the OPSEC knight, for example, if you take in that on the warlord class, or on your warlord that have the proper trait, so you can get back and take away the objective from the opponent that fought it already is his. That can switch, you know, the tables and give you the advantage and the primary points. So I think it's a nice thing to have, and definitely something that you should have if you want to play competitively.
Especially that it costs one CP only for the warlord class.
Yep.
And I think the Nargul ones are good because might be good because there is a stratagem to the full table. That's cool. The Slaanesh stratagem is not so worth mentioning, the same as Khorne one. And the Cinch one might be useful because you can, for one CP, just auto-wound some shoot. So if you want to be sure that the Melta shot, for example, wounds the vehicle, you can just pay one CP and do not roll a die. Because you can think that if I fail, I would use the CP to reroll. So if you are certain you want to use the CP to reroll the wound roll, so you can just, you know, don't get in your fortune, just auto wound.
Mm-hmm. Yep, all right. So up next we've got warlord traits. Any comments on that, Duda? I don't think there's much changed.
Yeah, they are pretty the same. The most important is that you get the OPSEC, so you can get the OPSEC on the big one. And there are a few others that gives you additional attacks and such things. And the biggest change in the world traits for me is that you can now give them to war dogs from the stratagem. So you can make the war dogs characters. So it gives them heroic intervention and also so small buff. So you can trade off the CPs for giving the character and some small traits to the war dog class models. But they are, as I said in the beginning, this is how warlord traits should look like in every codex. There is nothing broken here. They're just small buffs to the certain model. That's cool. There is no such warlord trait that you can reroll all hit rolls and all wound rolls, like for example in Tau, which is crazy. You can just, for example, add one to attack and reroll hit rolls of one in melee. That's the cool buff, nothing else.
Yep, I agree.
All right. Psychic powers, that's a new one in the book. So now obviously we'll get at some point to the new unit, that is the Knight Abominant, but it's a Psyker, so there is a new discipline dedicated for Knights here. It has 6 powers, Vladdy. Anyone that's worth taking?
The one that is obvious to fault as Winds of the Warp, that gives you that, fortunately, only to the Psyker, it gives 5+ Feel No Pain. And also, if you actually have passed that test on 5 of 8 or more, or the household war dogs within 6 of that Psyker have a Feel No Pain on 6. So it also should be in most of the lists, because it's an interesting one. If I'll be taking Abominant, I still think it's a bit overcosted for a single model. Then I'll be running that power for sure. I'm not sure if I'll be able to fit that into the list with only War Dogs, but that's the power that stands out. It's a clear one. The second one that can be of use is the one that disallows Overwatch. It's a malediction that works on 6 within 18 inches of the Psyker that disallows Overwatch and set the defend. Also, it has a potential on inflicting some mortal wounds on the unit, though the mechanic is difficult to abuse and to actually inflict many of those mortal wounds. So basically, it turns off Overwatch. It's a nice one as well. The rest are 2 Witchfires. I don't think you really need Witchfires in the list, especially that you have access to Smite. And there are 2 maledictions. One is basically -1 to leadership, and every time the unit is selected to shoot out fight, it must first pass a dread test. If the test is failed, then the weapon skill and ability skill is -1. It's kind of okay, but nothing special about it. And the last one is you cast malediction, 18 inches value, charge, warp charge of 7, and it adds 1 to attack wound rule against that model. Also,
but only in combat. That's
also only in combat. Yeah, only in combat, and some mortal wounds can be dealt to that unit on 6s. So basically,
that's the cheap doom, basically.
Yeah,
you put on the enemy unit and
kinda okay, but still, I don't think it's gonna see much use, especially that those access to psychers is a bit limited in the army.
Okay, thanks for that. And we go on to relics. Duda, what's your take on the relics? Anything interesting here?
Yeah, the first relic, if you play the Infernal, that's the must pick. So you just get the 2+ Feel No Pain against the wounds you lose from the Demonic Surge ability, and you double the number of wounds in case of the table. So if you take Infernal, and especially on the big guy, you just prevent the wounds you suffer from the Demonic Surge, and double the number of wounds. As we said, there's no really possibilities to work on the full table if you're damaged. So that's the cool stuff, I think. And the one from Iconoclast, it's always 4 up in the range attack and 6 up against the melee attacks. I don't think it's that great. You can only always pop up the 4-up invul against shooting from the stratagem, and 6-up invul doesn't really change that much. There is no really 4 AP, I think, in combat. Most of them are -3, so it would be the same. And there is also, I think, 3 pages. Not all of them are worth mentioning for me. The Helm of War Dogs, it's good, I think. It gives +1 attack to the bearer and aura of reroll wound rolls of 1 to the War Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the cool stuff. But that's the problem if you put it on the guy, because it goes only for the Wardog. And okay, that's cool. You get the aura of reloading once. But this guy is the priority target for your opponent, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that's some kind of trade-off. You can, you know, try to soak some shooting by placing it correctly. And I don't think there is much more worth mentioning there. Maybe Vlad.
Well, actually, my first pick was the Home of Dogs. I'll be playing it probably. That's going to be the only rank I'll be playing. Obviously, if you take a few War Dogs, and they are basically the basic goal of those War Dogs is to provide your army firepower with long-range firepower, then being able to reroll once of one is a huge thing. Duda is, of course, right that this War Dog is going to be a priority target. But as we already mentioned, you can give it, you can give some nice favor ability to it. For example, Blessing of the Dark God to make it, Blessing of the Dark God to make it more durable. And so basically, four Halberdiers with real ones to wound, were reals one any wound, and real one to hit sounds like a good deal. And that's one I'm going to be testing first. The rest I actually run through most of the those relics, though they fit the description that Duda gave for the whole codex. They are okay. They give you some push and some direction. They can give you 2+ save, which can be interesting. They can improve your Sakir abilities if you want that. But nothing really, at least for the first reading, you know, when you read the codex only for the 10th time, you actually see something extremely interesting that will work with your army. But for those first reads, I didn't see anything that would really stand out. When you compare those relics to those that are available for needs, for example, they seem like, sad brothers that stand in the corner of the dark room and cry all the time. These are not on the same level. These are just nice buff to certain units. You can give them away because you have stratagems to give those relics, to give you more of the War Dogs those relics, but I'm not even sure it's worth it, because these are not that much game changers like the relics, for example, in the Nid Codex. But as I said, Home of Dogs, that's one I'm going to be sticking with for the first tests.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke. And secondary objectives. Let's start with Duda. What do you think about those?
Yeah, so definitely they give you some stuff that was lacking before, because there was no secondaries, and there was always a problem to feed the third one. As I think all of our listeners know, you had to take summoning to try to do any secondaries, because most of the in most cases you took like domination or quarters, killing something, and then you had to choose the third one, which was the banners, for example, and then you had to take some furies, and now you get the missions that you can make with your knights, so you can make entire knight army and do not fear of the secondaries. That's cool. And I think my favorite one is the last one, Storm of Darkness, that allows you to start the action on the objective at the end of the morale phase of your turn. So after you can wipe out your opponent from the objective, and it ends at the start of the shooting phase, so you cannot move the knight, but it will shoot. And if it survives on the objective, you get 3 victory points. So I think that's the cool one. And the other good one is the one that makes you to control the half of the objectives, and there are some other things that you have to get more points. But let's say it's a domination with some additional conditions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do think that these secondaries, they're not the Kratos Elder ones for sure. You have part of the enemy, a fitting challenge that basically is useless because you have to kill to be able to actually score, competitively speaking, high number. I mean, you have to kill 3 most expensive units of the opponent till turn 2. So if you killed 3 of the most expensive units your opponent have till turn 2, until the turn 2 finishes, you score 15 points. If you don't, then you don't. Then those points get lower and lower. So basically, I don't see that. That's not exactly a nice one. The Path of Destruction actually disallows you to score more than 10 points realistically during the battle. Not sure if we want to get through the mechanic, but basically it's scoring more than 10 points from this Numeration of Respite secondary seems like a stretch. Battlefield Supremacy is actually super easy. I think it's an out to pick. It's an easier domination, basically. Though you can score 4 points if you met all the conditions. So basically, and it seems really a bit easier than domination because you don't even have to, because you don't have to be on more than on half of the objectives on the table to score any points. If you can't do that, you all still score points if those objectives are within your dread range. So it's better than domination because it can give you more points per turn, and also because it can give you points even if you actually were not able to get those on the objectives, but still were able to get those objectives within your dread range. So it's actually a good one, but well, we all know that Battlefield Supremacy secondaries are actually all good. Most of them are good and are the first pick for any list, for any army, for any mission. You always pick Battlefield Supremacy secondary, Elder Domination, Stranglehold, or the quarters. So basically, it's good, but if you want to, you already could have taken the strategy, the secondaries from the book, from the mission pack, and you know, taking the Battle of Supremacy, that you can take only one, the faction specific one, you can take only one from the codex. So taking the Battle of Supremacy one seems like a waste. Though we have to say that it's actually a good one. And those, the Storm of Darkness that do that, like, I'm not sure if I get the how it works right. It's you can start making an action at the morale phase of your turn.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So basically, if I'm reading this correctly, the knight have to make an action, and then for the next turn until psychic phase, it can do shit. And if he survives to that point, the action is complete. So he will have to survive through all the opponent's turn for the action to succeed. And then in his next movement shooting, no, magic phase. So in his movement phase, he can't do shit. I'm not sure if that's actually that good, because you have to, Duda is right that you don't have to sacrifice a lot of things you can do with that knight to achieve it, but you have to survive on the objective through whole opponent's turn, and you can't do that if the opponent has something on the objective, though that is quite easily avoidable because you can simply kill everything on the objective and then start action in the morale phase. That's okay. But you have to survive through the whole turn to be able to succeed with the action.
I do not say it's done like out of 15 points. But
yeah,
it compensates the requirement of summoning, let's say.
Yeah, I agree with that. You can, I think, quite easily.
It's like easy six, maybe nine.
Yeah, yeah.
If you wipe out your opponent, it's 12 points.
Yeah, it's maybe 12 or more points. Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. It's not, it's simply, it's not that obvious. That's what I meant.
Okay, well, we've covered that extensively. So I think we've got just those dread abilities, Harbringers of Dread. So let's go over that. I'll quickly introduce it. So basically, over the course of a battle, you get a new ability each battle round. And well, depending on what they are, then usually something happens to the enemy within dread range. It has to take a test on 2d6. And if the result exceeds the highest leadership in the unit, the test is failed, and then something happens. So anything interesting here, Duda? What do you think?
I would start with saying that they are, if you progress through the table, you don't lose the previous ones, because
yeah,
I know that some people in Poland thought like you lose the previous ones, but no, so they stuck together, and that's cool, and it's very, I think this ability is really good, it's written really good, because the further in the game, the more powerful the those abilities get. So in the first turn, you get just -1 to the leadership and -1 to combat attrition. That's nothing scary. Then you can choose 3 of them. You can make your opponent to subtract 3 from the aura abilities. That's might be okay from some armies. There is a good one that if your opponent is within the dread range and if the dread test is failed, he can only shoot to the closest eligible target or halves the charge rolls. So that might be also, but there is nothing you can, you know, set your tactic upon. But that's the good addition, let's say. On the third row, I think the most powerful is -1 to hit from more than 12 inches, so you get some defense against the long range shooting. But that's the right one, and the most powerful is on the left one. So if you get to -1 to shooting in the third row, you cannot get to the left one on the fourth row, and the fourth row, the left one is the most powerful. And it says that when your opponent is within dread range of your models, it loses the OPSEC ability. So basically, from the turn 4, and I think that's the one you're going to use mostly, especially with OPSEC heavy armies. If there is no OPSEC armies you play against, you can go for -1 to hit in combat or something. But you make your opponent lose the OPSEC, so all the objectives, if there is no possibility that there is a contest on the objective, because you have the OPSEC, your opponent doesn't, so you just win all the objective contesting. And but if you will, you can, you know, go the middle column, so you just make your opponent -3 to leadership and lose a lot of models, additional models, flee, a lot of attrition and such things. And if you go the right one, you get -6 to hit and your opponent is worse in combat. So the best thing about all those abilities is that you can choose during the game, so you can see the situation on the table and then choose it adequately to the situation, the table. And that's the best thing about those abilities. And in total, those abilities are nothing broken again. They are just cool addition to your army. And as Vladi said earlier, if you mix, you lose those abilities. So these work only for the pure House Knight army.
So Vladi, is it worth the trade-off?
It's a difficult question. I do think it's not a question of worth. It's a question of choice. I do think that souping knights can give you things that trade good for the losing of those abilities. Though, I do not agree that these rules are not game changing. I do think that Gaze Storm is actually one of the best things in the codex, most broken ones. The fact that you can just remember that you will have minus one to leadership within 12 inches from your knights at the moment you use Gaze Storm. So basically all of them willing to charge your knights will have to pass a leadership test, and those leadership values are not what they used to be. They are low, let's be honest. You have to pass a leadership test that you cannot reroll because it's not a morale test, it's a dread test, that and those pesky command reroll does not allow you to reroll that. So basically you have to pass a leadership of 7 sometimes. And let's joke about a bit. Tyranids, except for big ones, except for the Synapse big ones, have a leadership around 5. So basically, the Regnant Knights army, except for Tyrants and things like that, is more or less, it's maybe not unchargeable, but extremely difficult to charge for the whole of Tyranid Codex. The Reveners have leadership of 5 with the Dread Host fire already in place. They will have to pass a dread test on 4 to be able to charge any knight. How many of those tests are gonna be passed? Come on. And then they have their charge halved. So of course, if you have a charge like 2 in charge or 3 in charge, that will probably not make much difference. But let's be honest, how many charges you failed if you have to roll 6? How many charges have you failed, important charges in your life, when you have to roll 6?
All of them.
A lot of them. A lot of them. So I'm telling you now, the Regnant Knights opponents will have a terrible, terrible heart attacks every time they will declare charge against the House Knights. Because I'm telling you, like 25% of them will not reach those knights. Just, you know, just straight because of this rule. I think this is one of the most OP rule in the whole codex. Of course, the shooting one part is not that powerful because it only works on the units within 12 inches. But the other one, come on, I will be dreaded, and any time I will be trying to charge a knight, because in this game, if you fail a charge that you planned, you're in deep shit in most situations, because you didn't reach the point on the table that you wanted to reach to be able to contest objectives, block a unit, things like that. The ability of the model to stop the charging unit is a huge thing in this game. Huge thing. And I actually think this is far more OP than the Paralyzing Insanity, because most of their own units have 5-man OPSEC anyway. So it's difficult to take objectives from them unless you destroy them. I do accept that it's a game changer if you're facing a OPSEC army with that bases its play the game plan of having those OPSEC running at you and taking objective from you, then pressing Insanity, of course, is a game changer. But in general, in most pairings, this Grace Storm seems for me far more of a game changer. And I'm kind of scared of this rule, actually, playing Knights, for example, against Renegade Knights. Fortunately, as we mentioned, in only words on the Pure Knights army, and Pure Knights army have some disadvantages on its own if it's not supported by infantry. So it may be no, it will maybe will not break the meta that much, but I find that scary. I do find that scary.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that is definitely a good one. I agree. And yeah, probably the other one worth mentioning is the OPSEC denial. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that it's, as you said, it's a good addition. It's not generally super broken, so it's not like you won't consider souping because you'd be losing this, but it's also not something that you're just willing to give up any day.
Yeah.
Right, on to the data sheets at last, I think. So there are a couple of Wardug additions. So Vlad has already mentioned we've got the Armager now. What was it? Armager.
Executioner.
Yeah, but I forgot.
Helverin. Guys, Wardug.
And now Wardug. It's a Wardug Executioner, yes. And it's got an additional point of AP on the autocannons, but otherwise it has not changed, except for that minus two movement. That's a change across the whole book. Then we've got a new Wardog, a Wardog Stalker. So that's from the new kit, and has the option to have either a Stubber or a Havoc multi-launcher, which is a no-loss weapon that's known from the Chaos Space Marine Codex, and on that it's pretty much the same, I think. Although in the CSM Codex, I think you did have to see the target, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. But well, no loss shooting is pretty crap anyways now after the data slate. And then you can take either a Avenger Chaining Cannon or the Thermal Spear, the Demon Breath Spear, now it's called. And then for a combat weapon, you get either a new Slaughter Claw or the Chain Talon. So this guy's got a lot of options. And it's pretty much the same as the Huntsman, but the Huntsman has less options. So it always comes with the super duper
melter. The most important thing about those Vortex, all of them, is that you have the old Holverines, the autocannon ones, and the rest is a combination of three things: close combat weapon, spear, and the chain cannon. And you have war dogs with different combination of those three things. You have two close combat weapons options. Basically, in my opinion, those new ones kind of suck because of simple one thing. They do not have access to more to meta. You said that the difference is that the Huntsmen have less options. Actually, the most important option it has is the ability to take meta gun as an additional weapon. And I think only Halverin and Huntsman has that option.
Yep, that's true.
And I think that's the only option. the Stubber and the Havoc is ridiculously stupidly useless, and the Stubber with no AP is useless as well. So basically, at this point, I do think that the only really viable options are the Huntsman and the Halverins, because they have the options to Malta, which improve they give you the huge improvement to the general damage output. The other one that is worth mentioning is Carnivore, that have only close combat options, and because of that, and he also has 14 movement in turns instead of 12, and 5 attacks.
And 2 plus weapon skill, yeah.
And 2 plus weapon skill. So he gets a lot of buffs for not having a shooting weapon. So he is very much considerable as a forward if you want to use knights for taking the fight to the opponent. This may be your pick, even though it also, as I said, doesn't have the option for Melta, which is stupid because it's a forward one. It should have a Melta, but doesn't have the option for that. But it's a one that is worth mentioning, I think, because his statistics are a bit different than the rest. And it is one more thing that it also has different. I think that all of them actually have one thing different. They have less movement, but they degrade slower. I don't know if you mentioned that, if you noticed that. Previously, I think those war dogs degraded on movement faster. Now, on the second,
yes.
They have
it
10
was
movement.
14, 8, and 6, or 14, 10, and 6, and now it's 12, 10, 8.
So, basically, on the second two, they still are quite fast, even though they lost movement in general, they gained movement on the second and the last tier. So, it's not exactly a nerf then, but more of a change, a trade-off. So you can look at that this way too.
All right. Does you agree with Vladdy's take of war dogs in general?
Yeah. There's nothing you should add.
All right. And then next up, we've got the Psyker Knight. Vladdy, what's your take on this guy?
I don't know. It's not Magera.
Yeah.
Come on. That's the whole thing. It's like Duda said on during some test games that we watched. It's not Magera, because it's not Magera, it doesn't have 5+ invulnerable save, and it's a big thing. It's an okay model. It's okay unit, but I think it's a bit. You can, as we all know, because people are scaring children with it. It can take a lot of overlapping buffs, like Blessing of the Dark Master, like some stratagem to roll a tray to make it hugely durable. Especially because it's one of the, I think, the only knight that can have Blessing of the Dark Master and 5+ feel no pain. So basically, it's a nice choice, but if you consider that it cost like 470 points with the Blessing of the Dark Master, it's a lot of points. It's really a lot of points for something you can't hide and have no invulnerable save in close combat. Duda, what you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I would never use it.
So
come on, it's shooting sucks, its combat is like not really close to anything that you can rely on. It's expensive, and what does it change if it casts the power or not, if it doesn't have the offensive power at all? I think,
well, it changed a bit. It's still 5+ feel no pain, but I do agree it kind of lacking. It's like they didn't want to, make it too powerful because it's a psyker and access to psychic powers. So we make it a bit weaker than some other knights. And because of that, the result is kind of, it's okay. But it's terribly expensive, so I'm not convinced, and do that think it's crap.
Yeah. Okay. But I think it's the case for all the big knights other than Magera, that you pay a lot for their defensive stats, which, let's agree, they didn't change by all from the previous codex. And in the previous codex, it wasn't hard to kill the knight in the current state of the game. Now you can get the denial of the rerolls and all the stuff, okay, but the base is the same. And the offensive output of entire Imperial or Chaos Knight in the codexes are like one big weapon, one small weapon, which is you can just skip it because it's a heavy stabber on one shoot of the Milta, and some combat. So for me, you know, okay, you pay a lot. Let's say they are durable, but they do not have such pushing power. Only you can say it, I think, about the Magera, because there is three shooting weapons. All of them are great. And then the immense combat. And also, it's a 5+ in close combat change a lot. So
yeah, that invulnerable stuff changes a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree with -1 damage. It's those big ones are a bit more durable in close combat than they used to be. But you have to remember that this big guy, as all of those big guys, do not get any save against Hive Tyrant with a sword running into them. It will get -1 to damage, so it will probably lose around 20 wounds in a single turn against Hive Tyrant and probably survive on 4. And it costs 500 points, and Hive Tyrant costs 200 points. So there's that.
Yeah, and this makes me, for example, right now when I'm thinking about the list, until Magera gets updated from the Forgeworld, I just thought that screw those shooting weapons. The Avenger Gatling cannon has not really a good profile in the current game. 2d3 shots from the thermal cannon, it's not the greatest. 2d6 shots from the battle cannon, it's not the greatest. And I thought, like, screw it, I just take the Rampager, because the most in all of the cases, the most offensive output you get from the big knight is its combat, and the Rampager just gets the combat the best, because it's additional attack and additional weapon skill. And losing this shooting weapon is not a really big case.
The Rampager also didn't get slowed down compared to the other knights. It's still got 12 movement on the top table. So it's also just that little bit faster.
Yeah, and he's basically the least expensive big one. So
until Magera gets updated and gets the sufficient keywords, it's hard to tell if you ever want to use the big knight. And if you do, I think the Rampager is the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess we've covered all those middle class knights. I'd just add that other than the Abominant, the other three all have a 9-inch aura ability that affects the War Dogs. So the mentioned Rampager gives a reroll of hit rolls of 1 in combat. The Desecrator gives a reroll of hit rolls of 1 in shooting, and the spoiler gives the ability for War Dogs to heroically intervene as if they were characters. And last but not least, we've got the Tyrant. So it got buffed in its save. It's got 2 up save now, which I guess is all right, but its weaponry is It's not like Hammerheads ignoring invulnerable saves or any stuff like that. What do you guys think? Does it have a place in the game right now?
Luda?
Okay, I see. So I think not, because it would work only against the other knights, because that's the only army that is such tank heavy. And if knights not gonna, you know, just ramp up into the meta and screw all the tournaments, then there is no useful place for Knight Tyrant.
Well, I do agree. I do think that the buffs, there are some buffs to the profiles of the weapons, but I think that they are a bit disappointing because it's kind of cool that you have D3 attacks with strength 16 minus 5. And Jesus Christ, D6 plus 8 damage, blast, terrible weapon. But then you roll 1 for number of attacks and you miss. Or you hit, but you do not roll. Or you actually roll the hit, but of course you won't. And then your opponent have 4 plus in Vulnerability and he passes it. And, well, this terrible weapon becomes useless. And how difficult is to miss, not wound, or get blocked by invulnerable save like 4 times in a row with weapon that has 2 shots. Come on. So, and it's basically the same for all the other weapons. There are a bit random in the number of attacks, and those attacks are reasonably powerful. The Tyrant basically have reasonable firepower. But the lack of mobility hurts it a lot because it also got nerfed with the number of the mobility. It has the movement of 8 now.
Oh my god. with this base?
So basically it doesn't move. it's a bunker.
No, maybe on the American tables when there is no terrain.
So basically it will be difficult to get the points back in the damage that your opponents with the Tyrant, and I do not think it's a competitively really viable option. Though it has a lot of firepower can really kill something in the opponent army, but most of its shots will bounce back from the high invulnerable save. So I don't see it.
And you're spending 600 points to get it on the table, which is really a lot.
Yeah.
That's the common problem of all the big weapons, let's say. I think that in this current state of the game, when there is invulnerable save on everyone, and it's like binary. So either you pass it or either you not pass it. And on 4 plus, it's like, 50% chance. Either you die because you get 8 plus d6 wounds, or you just lose nothing. And I think that it would be great if Games Workshop, and last time we were groaning, they make some changes fast, so maybe they will hear us again. It would be great if they put some abilities. For example, if let's imagine, let's take this weapon of the Tyrant that makes the 8 plus d6 wounds, and let's say it gets the ability that it worsens the invulnerable save of the opponent by 1, and now it's not 4 plus, it's suddenly makes it 5 plus, and that's the big change. But or for example, let's say that even if you block it by invulnerable save, you get 4 wounds. Okay.
Yeah. I completely agree with that.
So it would make the game more fluent, not binary. Either you die because you get 8 plus d6 wounds, or you get nothing. But
no,
if you
zero
pass
damage.
If you pass the invulnerable save, you get, I don't know, 4 mortals or 4 wounds. That's the half of the damage, but that's not nothing. And then those weapons, entire heavy anti-tank weapons that has small amount of shoots, but the great damage, would be much more useful.
Well, they will basically fulfill its purpose. Now they fulfill its purpose only against models that do not have invulnerable save, which
exactly.
Are
so
not which do not exist right now. There are no competitively viable options in any codexes for the models, for the heavy tank or things like that do not have invulnerable save, because if they do not have invulnerable save, that they are not used at all. So So to make those really heavy weapons, no anti-vehicle, anti-monster weapons viable with a small number of shots, they have to have some ability that will be able to get through that invulnerable safe, even if it's passed. And I mean, with some of the damage, not all of the damage. It's important making a rule that will completely ignore invulnerable safe on such weapons. It's also a bad thing, because then the opponent will have no chance of finding a way out of the situation. And those invulnerable safes that those models pay a lot of points for will be useless. I don't like those rules that take away invulnerable safes in general, but the rule that still inflicts some damage, even if the invulnerable safe is passed, is a great way of solving this.
Yeah, that would be really an interesting take on it. I agree. All right, we've got through the book. I'm not going to bother you about sample lists. I think they pretty much came up along the way. But just to summarize, so where do you guys see this army? Does it make the top 8 for the WTC, in your opinion, or does it not make the cut?
I have to pick some points.
So let's go with Duda.
Yeah, I think it does in some variety. Either as an addition to some Imperial or Chaos army, or as a clean one with only knights, but definitely I think we will see the knights in the top eight armies of some countries in this year WTC.
Okay. Vladi, would you take them?
We will see either a knight and a renegade knight or knights in all the WTC armies in some way. Giving you a take on the knights in terms of top 8 armies that you would like to take WTC, it's a difficult thing now, because most things are properly analyzed only after a number of games, after a tournament. So it's difficult to say at this point, but we were actually making, let's say, fantasy teams for our captain to prepare properly for the WTC, to prepare to be able to, you know, find out the meta, find out which armies do not have a place in top 8, to help him navigate his way through the pickings for the top 8 armies to go to WTC. And in my fantasy team, I actually included both knights and the renegade knights and standard knights, though in both situations as a soup, because I do think that the pure army lacks a lot. It lacks mobility. It lacks the ability to pick opponents of the objective markers on WCT tables, which are ruin heavy, and on which the most of the objective markers are behind ruins, so they are hiding from your opponent. And with this limited mobility that the knights enjoy now, it may be difficult to steadily take those objectives away from your opponent, even though you have five man obstacle and everything. So that's first thing. Secondly, I don't like armies that automatically give away 15 points from bringing down, and pure knights do that. So I do think they will suit perfectly for them, for some soups, for take Chaos Space Marine on even demon soup with Chaos Renegade Knights, or maybe some Imperial armies with standard Imperial Knights. So I do think that they are going to be there. The most important thing is that they support any army that you want to submit it with two important things: very steady long range firepower and five-man OPSEC vehicles. You can supplement any army with five-man quite fast-moving vehicles and reasonable firepower. This is an addition that I think any Chaos or any Imperial army will take gladly. And if you really want to, you can also add them in limited capacity to any army without breaking its army-wide exclusive rule, like Cabal points. So I do think that we will see a lot of knights on W2C, though maybe not in knights pure armies.
All right. Well, thanks for that. That's all very good insight. And I think that's a wrap up. I just don't think I had the chance to congratulate the two of you on making the national team. So here it is. Congrats.
Thank you.
And well, I'm sure, or I'm hopeful we'll get to speak again. So we'll wait with the good luck wishes. So to our listeners, that's it for today. We've covered the Chaos Knights. We'll see if we manage to do the Imperial ones next week. And yeah, thanks to Duda and Vladi for providing their expertise on the topic.
No problem.
Thanks.
And goodbye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.